On Tuesday, February 12th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents saxophonist, vocalist, flute player, composer, clarinetist, band leader, and educator, Camille Thurman. That's Tuesday, February 12th at 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
When pushing comes to shove. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is saxophonist, flute player, composer, clarinetist, vocalist, band leader, and educator, Camille Thurman. WBAI is also in the midst of our winter fundraising drive, and you can help us while we're on the air by calling 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
Come on. Save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
My heart is calling. Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Camille Thurman.
Camille Thurman, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate this time that you're going to spend with us, especially in the midst of such a busy schedule that you're having right now. You were traveling. You were actually doing some major traveling and some major gigging. What are you doing right now?
Well, I just got back from the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. We did a performance at the KC Jazz Club. I literally got back that night before from Cozumel, Mexico, because I was hitting with Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra on the Blue Note Jazz Cruise.
Wow.
And we did some runs in Florida, too, so... It's been a busy week.
Now, you're playing with, what's his name, Green.
Yes, Daryl Green. We have a collaborative project, Camille Thurman and the Daryl Green Trio, which we just performed at the Kennedy Center, and we've been doing that for the last 5 years. And
yeah.
I think we're getting ready to release a project this year, too.
That would be helpful, because I keep hearing this song. It's a Horace Silver song that you cover. And I am so annoyed that I don't have it to play.
Oh. It's not quite 100% ready for release yet, but there's some videos online performing it live.
You know, I may just have to drag some audio from the
video.
That is so amazing. What is the name of that?
Won't You Open Up Your Senses?
Yes.
Like a whip upon the were great. Well, though I have gone out of shape, that thing we smell that's oh so crude could really be our own truth. Well, why don't you open up the fences and eliminate the senses while it's all small pants? Every aspect of your life. Upon your face. chances to be as big up your life.
And that is such a true Horace Silver mood.
Yeah.
So expansive. Did you ever meet him?
No, unfortunately, I never got to meet him. Wish I did.
How did that wind up being part of the repertoire?
I was hanging out with my mentor, Antoine Roney, one summer, and he was talking to me, and he was like, you know, Camille, there's some Horace Silver stuff from the 70s and 80s that are gems that nobody really covers.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And he had just passed away, I think, about maybe 6 or 7 months before. And my mentor, Antoine, was like, you should really check these tunes out and check out those albums because not a lot of people cover them. And I was like, okay. And I spent the whole summer just listening to it, and I was amazed by the fact that it was all local music.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Horace Silver stuff that I knew of, you know, like Juicy Lucy song from my father, Sophie McNasty, mainly instrumental, and it had a certain kind of sound to it.
Right.
The stuff that he did in the 70s is completely different. And then on top of that, the subject matter is about consciousness, humanity, love for one another, community, all these issues that are important and relevant today. And I was just like, wow, I got to find a way to bring some light on this music because a lot of people are sleeping on it.
I love that period of Horace Silver's music as well because I actually took a picture of the two of you together. One of the vocalists was Andy Bay, who sang on a lot of those tunes.
That's right. Yeah, I had to do talking to Andy too about it, which was so cool because I think we did a show with Brandon Bain, I think 2 years ago, with Jasmine Horn, myself, and Andy Bay. I got to talk to him backstage and I was like, Mr. Bay, I'm doing a project on some stuff that you did with Horace. And he was so happy. He was smiling ear to ear. And we got to talk about it. And he shared some stories with me about Horace, which was really cool.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Antoine Roney. You know, a lot of people tend to mention Antoine Roney when they talk about being involved in music in the city, in New York City in particular. I don't know what it is. I have to get him and pull his coattail and find out how he's like the hub.
Yeah. I'm sure he would love to talk to you and come on your show. He's an incredible saxophonist, historian, anything and everything about the music, you name it. He is such an incredible walking encyclopedia resource. And a lot of the young musicians, myself, Daryl Green, even some of the young cats on the scene today, young tenor player by the name of Emilio Modeste, he plays the Wallace Roney. Antoine is just such an incredible and amazing person to so many of us young musicians, and he was very encouraging to me as far as figuring out my path, musically speaking, what I wanted to do, if I wanted to only play saxophone or only sing or do both. He was one of my biggest advocates that really encouraged me and pushed me to do both, to take chances.
How did you run into him? What was the introduction?
Well, it was actually Daryl Green. Daryl and I met on the jazz scene, either hang out at the jazz clubs and play or, you know, passing through town from a tour or whatnot. We would come together and mingle, and I met him there on the scene, and he was like, you know, Camille, you really should talk to a friend of mine who's an incredible saxophonist. He's a great mentor. I think you do well with him. And I just got on the scene. I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. And it was at the perfect time because Antoine, he really helped me get my stuff together as far as being an artist, but then also as far as being a saxophonist and also understanding the history of this music, because it's so important. If you're going to be out here representing the music, you have to understand what makes this music what it is and what makes it special and who are the people behind making it special so that you can be able to continue that tradition. So he was really helpful to me, and I can't think of enough words to express my gratitude for him being in my life.
That's good to hear. Good to hear you're part of that lineage. We'll be right back. So you're a New Yorker.
Yes, I am, born and raised.
You went to LaGuardia, I see. Did that help you attending that school?
Yes and no, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It was a band teacher of mine from middle school, Peter Archer. He encouraged me to go to that school because he was like, you need to go to a place where you're around teachers that can push you because I can only do what I know, but I think you should be here. And another thing, the first concert he took me to was a senior jazz concert, and it was directed by Bob Stewart, who was at the time running the jazz program, and he's an incredible educator, tubist.
Yes.
And just a great person. Period. And he had that band sounding so good. And there were two females at the time who are my closest friends now, Lakeisha Benjamin and Patty Rodriguez. They were in the band at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this girl's playing the saxophone. It sounds really good. And you're doubling and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like 12 years old at the time. So that kind of got me charged up to go to the school. But the school was a good experience because it put me in a situation where I was around a lot of other young people passionate about playing music.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Stewart, he was the perfect nurturer because he made everybody feel included. And it didn't matter whether you were rich or poor, whether you were playing since you came out of the womb, or whether you started playing yesterday. It didn't matter. Everybody was included. And he taught the history of the music to us. He played the music for us all the time, so we were checking out records, and he just gave us an enthusiasm about the music that I had never experienced before. And he was incredible. After he left, it was kind of sad for me and a bunch of other students because we came there for him.
Right.
And due to administration, they got somebody else, and it didn't really work out too well the following 2 years because there were some things happening, I guess, when it comes to puberty, young boys and girls not meshing and playing an instrument, and that kind of stuff kind of got a little bit out of hand. Overall, it was good.
And I want to get this out of the way because you had contributed to the local 802 Allegro magazine, and you mentioned things that occurred during that time in that piece. So if anyone is interested, you can look it up on our Sugar My Bowl website, because I'm sure you've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, I've actually got a lot of great feedback from that article from both men and women, which is awesome. I would never have thought that my story would reach so many people and still resonate, because a lot of times young women feel like, you know, it happened. Part of life, just get over it, toughen up. But it was really beautiful to be able to see the community come out and be like, no, this happened to me too. Or, wow, I didn't even know. How can I help in being supportive to young women musicians and be the support that they need?
Just to be clear, the article is titled #MeToo, A Story of Resistance and Resilience in the Music Industry. And one of the things I do want to say around that piece and around some of the issues that you brought up is I also saw an interview that was conducted. It was actually in some Eastern European place between you and this woman. And the woman started talking about your playing saxophone. And she pointed how, you know, it's usually something that's played by men. And why is it you're so pretty? Why would you want to play a saxophone? I was like, well, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's beyond just the male-female thing. I think it's the concept and the thought process of the community as a whole. We have these constructs of what it means to be, I guess, a woman or a man or a saxophonist or whatnot, and we practice and we live these concepts without even knowing it in our interactions with people. But yeah, that's a classic example.
Mm-hmm.
I just found out about love and I like it. Yes, I like it. I like what love has been doing to me. Closing my arms and I like it. Yes, I like it. Oh, what a wonderful future I see. It's a one time only. It's a lifetime deal. And I know that it's real. I can tell by the way that
Gotten that out of the way. To clarify, mm-hmm. You play tenor saxophone.
Uh-huh.
Do you play soprano as well?
I do. Occasionally I do. Okay. I mainly play tenor, but I do play soprano.
Right. You
I
play flute?
Play clarinet.
Oh, and uh-huh. clarinet.
Yep. Flute. I do all the flute.
And you're a vocalist.
Yes.
Have I left anything out? Have you left anything out?
No, that's who I am. Compose music and, yeah.
Where did the interest to compose come from?
I don't know, honestly. I think since I was a child, I've always been attracted to music because I have this special ability called perfect pitch. And when I was a kid, I would listen to the radio and I would hear music and I'd match it with the colors that I knew or the time of day or the color of the sky. Music always had a direct connection with me internally. And when it comes to composing, I kind of think of composing as almost like painting. The way of communicating and expressing yourself. So that's how I understood music, and that's how I guess I communicated through composing, almost like speaking.
Well, I understand you're also a visual artist.
Yeah. My first year at LaGuardia, I was an art major, actually, before transferring to becoming an instrumental major.
Uh-huh. So what is your media? What do you use?
I don't really do much visual art anymore. I kind of want to get back into it, though, because Gerald Cannon, he got me fired up.
He's
an incredible bassist and just an outstanding painter.
Right.
And
so your thing is paint?
Yeah.
Acrylic, painting. Watercolor?
Mainly watercolor.
Okay.
I also love drawing, too, with color pastels. Those are my favorites.
Nice.
Messy,
nice.
But it's fun.
Right? Yay.
Right.
So do you have any pieces available online?
I don't think I have any pieces available. There might be some lingering around on my Facebook page, probably from college.
Great.
If you do some digging, you might find them. But there's some drawings and not as many paintings. The paintings my mom has in her basement.
Okay.
She kept those from high school. She keeps everything.
All right.
They're probably still in my little painter's bag.
Okay. From what I hear, I noticed mm-hmm. that in addition to Gerald Cannon and lots of other mm-hmm. musicians who are also visual artists, who are painters and sculptors
yeah.
and what have you, some of the ones that I've asked about it, they decide to do that as a form of relaxation or meditation.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah. Which I probably should do.
Yeah. When you get some time, first you have to be still first.
I know. I need to get some time to do that. Did it.
Thank you.
To the music discussion.
Sure.
You were part of the Sarah Vaughan competition. You were a finalist?
Yeah.
Was that 2013, I think?
Yeah, it was 2013. It was the second year they did it.
Ah, wow. Yep. So what was that like? How did you become involved in that?
You know, it's funny because for a long time I kept singing a secret because my biggest fear, especially since I was a young child playing, was what if they think automatically I'm a vocalist and they don't take me as an instrumentalist seriously. So I wouldn't sing because a lot of times you would go into a jazz club or you'd show up to a musical event like, oh, you're a singer? Not that it's a bad thing, but it's just kind of like, well, I have an instrument in my hand. For me, it was always like, let me try to see if I can be the best that I can be and really know my stuff so that when I pull my instrument out, there's no questioning of what I do and how I'm able to do it. So when this opportunity came, I kind of mentioned it to a few of my mentors. I talked to Antoine. I talked to Mimi Jones. I even talked to Daryl. And I was like, yeah, this competition, I'm thinking about doing it, but I don't know if I should. And they all said you should do it. And I was like, yeah, but what if people get mad at me because I'm an instrumentalist doing something that a vocalist would do? And what if they're like, oh, you know, you're just kind of dip-daddling? Because I respect the music, too, and there's a lot of great vocalists. And to be a vocalist, you have to really study your craft. And I didn't want to be one of those people that just kind of dibble-dabble and be like, okay, I'm back on my instrument. I wanted to be really serious. So if I was going to do it, I'm going to do it 100%.
Right.
And they all said do it. And I said, okay. And I submitted some stuff. And it was crazy because, like, I believe in God. And everything that was happening, especially at that time, I felt was preparing me for that. I went on my first international tour under my name at that same time. And then also I did some other stuff that was kind of helping me prepare. I was doing a residency at Smoke Jazz Club and all these great things. So I was putting my stuff together and I sent the audition tape and I was literally in Russia, in Siberia when I got the emails. Congratulations, you made it to the final five. And I was like, oh, it worked. And they're like, yeah, 900 something people applied from all over the world and you made it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, crap, this is real. It worked out. I was on tour, and I was already working my book out and working my tunes out. And I was like, okay, this is cool. So when it came time for the competition, I sent them all my music, and I showed up. And I just thought of the competition as it's another opportunity to get on the stage, just like what you were doing in Russia or wherever in New York City, and just have a room full of people just having a conversation with you and chilling out and doing what you love the most and doing it the best of your ability. And I did that, and it was crazy because after that, so many people came to me and were like, I didn't know you sang. And I was like, well, I was scared to sing because I didn't want to be bad for being a so-so half and half singer. And they were like, no, this is cool because there's not that many people that sing and play. And it was just like, oh, I found a niche for myself. Okay.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is saxophonist, flute player, composer, clarinetist, vocalist, band leader, and educator, Camille Thurman. What you're listening to in the background, which I hate talking over, is The Dreamweaver from Camille Thurman's 2013 Hot Tone Music release, Origins. Camille Thurman is on soprano saxophone. She's a composer and also co-producer. Mimi Jones is a co-producer. Brandy Younger on harp. Cochrane Holt on bass. Rudy Royston on drums. Before that, we heard Sassy's Blues from Camille Thurman's 2017 Chesky Records release, Inside the Moment, recorded live at Rockwood Music Hall. Camille Thurman on tenor saxophone and vocals, Mark Whitfield on guitar, Ben Allison on bass, and Billy Drummond on drums. Before that, we heard I Just Found Out About Love from Camille Thurman's latest release, the 2018 Chesky Records, Waiting for the Sunrise. Camille Thurman on tenor saxophone and vocals, Jack Wilkins on guitar, Cecil McBee on bass, Steve Williams on drums. Before that, we heard the title selection from Origins, which features Camille Thurman on tenor saxophone, composer and co-producer, Mimi Jones, producer, Luis Perdomo on piano, Cochrane Holt on bass, and Rudy Royston on drums. Before that, we heard YouTube audio recorded last year from Camille Thurman and the Daryl Green Trio, Horace Silver's Won't You Open Up Your Senses, Camille Thurman on tenor saxophone and vocals, Daryl Green on drums, Anthony Wanzi on piano, Lonnie Palexico on bass. And before that, we heard another selection from Waiting for the Sunrise, World Waiting for the Sunrise. Before that, we opened with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This was originally recorded in 1967. This is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Don't forget, WBAI is in its winter fund drive, and we could use your financial support. You could help us by calling 516-620-3602. Donate what you can. We only want what you can spare. You could also go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams and more from Camille Thurman on Sugar in My Bowl, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Jazz fans, this is Hank Williams and welcome to On the Bandstand for February 12th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar in My Bowl guests so you can see them live. And tonight's guest is vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Camille Thurman. She'll be at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Hall with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra for a McCoy Tyner tribute on April 5th through 6th. And this is normally the time when we go into the shows of the week, and we'll do that in a moment, but WBAI Radio's Winter Fun Drive is underway, and it needs your support to stay on the air and keep this show on the air. There are two ways you can pledge. You can call 516-620-3602 while we're on the air. That's 516-620-3602, or pledge online at give2, that's the number 2, wbai.org. That's give2, wbai.org. You can make a one-time pledge for as little as $5, and we urge you to consider becoming a sustaining member with a monthly pledge, which we call being a WBAI buddy, which gets you voting rights in the station, and it gets you some extra perks. It's particularly helpful for the station because it gives management a very consistent source of predictable funding every month. And I'll repeat all that info at the bottom of the segment after our music listings. We start this week with vocalist Catherine Russell, who leads a septet at Birdland from February 12th through 16th in an album release event for Alone Together. Vision Fest promoters Arts for Art take their free jazz series on the road to Holo in Ridgewood, Queens on the 14th. Vocalist Nana Camille Yarborough is at the Schomburg Library in Harlem on the 14th. Vocalist Diane Reeves is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater on the 14th and 15th. Drummer T.S. Monk leads a sextet at Jazz Forum Arts in Tarrytown, New York on the 15th and 16th. Drummer Francisco Mora Catlett leads Afrohorn at Zinc Bar on the 16th. Bassist Reggie Workman and drummer Lenny White are at Brooklyn Sisters Place on the 16th. Pianist Mark Carey's Harlem Session Series continues with late Saturday night sets at Smoke on the 16th and 23rd. Trumpeter Eddie Henderson is at Zinc Bar with David Hazeltine's quartet for a late afternoon set on the 17th, and that's part of the VTY Jazz Series. Looking a little further ahead, pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smalls on the 20th. Saxophonist T.K. Blue is at Brooklyn Sisters Place on the 23rd. Saxophonist Claire Daly is at the Brooklyn Commons on the 26th, and that's part of Ross Moshe's Music Now series. Finally, organist Joey DeFrancesco leads a trio with drummer Billy Hart at the Jazz Standard on the 27th, and that's celebrating their release of In the Key of the Universe. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news, and Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website, and if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And again, if you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The Support WBAI link on our Sugar in My Bowl website has details, and again, while we're on the air, you can call 516-620-3602 or pledge anytime at give2wbai.org. And we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our new weekly schedule, we'll be back on air next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. and have updated event listings online. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio and online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
This is so funny. The first time I saw you, you were with Tia Fuller, and you weren't playing with her. This was one of the outdoor, I think it was a WBGO event. Rhonda Hamilton was the host, or she was the hostess. And I thought you were Tia's sister. No, 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 I thought you were Shami's sister. That's what it was. I thought you were Shami Royston's sister.
Everybody says that. This is me and Shami, your sisters. And it's crazy because we kind of do look alike in reverse repeat.
Right.
So it's just like,
And you recorded with her, as a matter of fact.
There's a sound we do. It is a voice of silence speaking. Hush, stop. It's a sound we must learn to.
I sang on her recording, if I'm not mistaken.
And my thing was, if everyone's going to put myself in that situation, I want someone to be like, well, okay, well, she's just really doing it.
Right.
And not half behind it.
And I can appreciate the way you look at it, because there are people who are doing one thing in the music and then they decide, okay, I think I'll sing. You know, it's like, well, because that's what one should be doing. You know, you
right.
do your thing for a little bit, but then you eventually sing. Like, everybody can do it. It's like, oh, sure.
Just as much of a craft as it is to study a piano or
exactly.
a saxophone or a bass. And it takes a lot of listening. It takes
exactly.
a lot of developing. I had to learn, too, when I made that commitment. Like, okay, I'm going to do both. It's double the work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the work you put in. As a matter of fact, there's one thing, speaking of singing, and I know somebody in particular that is pretty picky about the concept of scatting. I'm going to tell you, I'm not one of them. I love it. But that.
I think I know who.
Yes. Yes, you do. You know exactly who.
Yeah.
Thank you.
appreciate the work that it takes. There is work in scatting. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, scatting, I mean, not to sound biased or anything, but scatting is not just random syllables. Scatting is a language.
Right.
And when you're playing an instrument, especially in jazz, when you're learning the music, it's a language. Mm-hmm. And when you hear solos from the saxophone or from the drums or the bass or the piano, they're not randomly just improvising and just whatever. No, there's a set form of bars or of chords, and you're creating within this framework something that's brand new off the edge of their seat. And it's the same thing with scatting. When you scat, you have to make a commitment to study that music, to understand how the theory relates with the phrases and to understand how to tell the story. And then also even the syllables. I mean, there's no dictionary of right or wrong syllables of scatting because it's a personal thing. And the only way you find it out is by taking the time to listen, transcribe, and literally figuring it out, mm-hmm. what works for you and what doesn't. It's something that I feel it's an art.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very serious art, just as serious as it is to play a piano or a saxophone, because you're creating. Your instrument is the voice, and you're telling a story. It's a language.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I am of the pro scatting school. Yes. It's like I'm just so taken by, I love scatting. No, when I was a child, though, you know, I would watch Ella Fitzgerald.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, with my sister and brother, you know, we would laugh because it seemed so funny. But we were children. We didn't know any better. But my grandmother was like, that's not funny. It was like, oh, okay. But I didn't, you know, of course, I didn't know I was a child. But as I grew older and I listened, it's like, I hear her. I hear exactly what she's saying.
She's interacting.
That's right. Yep. It's like, oh, yeah, that piano said that. That bassist said that. She said that to that. And it's, man, I am definitely of the pro scat school.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Recording. You have 4 recordings under your belt at this point.
Mm-hmm.
4 releases. Well, I don't want to mention the most recent right now, but I do want to start with your first. Origins.
Yes.
Or was it Spirit Child? It was Origins. And
yes.
That is still available. One could actually still get that. Now, Spirit Child, however, is that available?
Spirit Child is unfortunately unavailable. I got to order some more copies.
Okay.
Because that sold out.
I mean, you know, because Origins you can get via CD Baby.
You can get it via CD Baby, iTunes.
All the other purchasing places you can find that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the story with Spirit Child?
Spirit Child actually wasn't a plan. It just happened. I was doing some submissions for a couple of different things and also going on tour. Mm-hmm. And I needed something because Origins wasn't ready for release yet. And we got together and we played and put some tunes together. And it was just like, oh, wow, this actually sounds really good. Maybe we should just make this into a project. So it was like the very, 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 very first album that came out before Origins, and Origins was the follow-up with my original composition.
That was my understanding, too.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, I thought Spirit Child was first. Inside the Moment was a live release.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was your third. How did you come about deciding to do a live release?
Well, actually, a label by the name of Chesky Records reached out to me, and I think I was on tour in Poland at the time with a group called Sisters in Jazz, and they reached out to me and said, hey, we have this really cool, innovative technology of recording, and it's called binaural recording, where basically they have a dummy with receivers made to look like a human body, but the receivers are in the ears, and it's one microphone. And they put it in the middle of a room, and all the musicians, they sit around it and play. And that's how it records.
Oh, wow.
So basically, there's no double takes. Literally, you just play, and it records. So it's not like a studio setting where, oh, if I messed up, I can go back and... No, it takes the whole take.
Okay.
And you have to be positioned the right way. So the mixing actually is the positioning of the musicians around the microphone, which was kind of cool. So they told me, yeah, we're putting together this project, and features Mark Whitfield, Ben Allison, and Billy Drummond. And I was like, whoa. And they're like, we'd like to have you. And I was like, okay. This is the first time that they were going to do it in a club, because normally they record it in the church. Usually the church is nice because it's a big open space and be able to get that nice big room sound with it. But they were like, we want to try it out and see how it sounds in the club, in a live audience. And I said, all right, cool. So we literally met for one rehearsal, got a bunch of tunes, threw them in the pot, and we played. And
the next time we got together, we did the hit and recorded. And it was really cool because I've never got to play with these musicians, and I have so much respect and love and admiration for them. And I didn't know what to expect. Just kind of walked in and we just played the music, and it was such a great, fun session. And that's what you have on Inside the Moment when you listen to it.
That's amazing. Now, you actually have two recordings on that label.
Yes, Inside the Moment and the latest one, Waiting for the Sunrise.
Did you record in the same way on Waiting for the Sunrise?
Yes and no. It's the same microphone, but we did that one actually within a church. It was a big space, and you get to hear the actual reverb from the church hall, which is kind of cool.
It is, because I was listening to it. It's like, this does not sound like a regular studio. And I didn't really know about the recording process when I listened to it. It just had such a different, rich sound.
Yeah, because it was literally just all four of us in the hall playing.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of good talk about Waiting for the Sunrise.
Yeah, it's been doing really well. I think it debuted number two on Billboard. The first one was John Coltrane.
All right. Right?
Yeah.
And you've got some really good people on here. One of them is a former Sugar guest, Cecil McBee, on bass.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Steve Williams on drums.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Wilkins on guitar. Jeremy Pelt is on trumpet. And you are playing tenor saxophone and vocals.
Yes.
Actually, where do you stand when it comes to flute?
That's my first love. My first instrument.
However, there is none here.
Well, this situation is a little different because when I was approached about this, the first one did well, and they're like, okay, we want to do a second one, and we want mainly it to be a nice vocal album.
Okay.
It was like, okay. All right. I'll put some stuff together and figure it out. And they're like, what were you thinking? And I said, well, I love to pay homage to some of my favorite vocalists that inspired me to sing. Sarah, Ella, Carmen, and also some songs that I love to feature, but people don't really get to hear them often. So we did that, and we chose to do saxophone and voice just because of the nature of the recording situation.
Got it.
Because normally with flute, you'd have the mic. And I think the flute would have worked fine in the hall, but to not complicate things, it was better to just keep it mostly voice, have the saxophone. Because if you record with the instrument, you'd be kind of laughing inside. For recording voice, you have to literally sing right in front of the dummy just so that it could get your voice clearly.
Okay.
Because it's receiving all these sounds from around it. To record the saxophone, because it was a church hall and it had a lot of reverb, I had to stand back like at least maybe 10 feet.
Oh, from the dummy.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it would be too much for the dummy. So
okay.
That's more than enough to deal with. Like, I was literally in one of the songs, you could hear me kind of tiptoeing back and forth to the dummy because I took a solo on saxophone, ran back to the dummy to sing, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
The Newness Is You, that was even harder because it was such a quiet tune, and it was a duo, so you could hear, like, the church floor was kind of creaky.
Okay.
It's not the pale blue that excites me, that thrills and delights me. It's just the nearness of you. It is in your sweet conversation that thrills this sensation. Oh, no. It's just the nearness of you. When you're in my arms and I feel you so close to me, all my soft light to enchant me.
It's wonderful. You selected all of the tunes. Do you always select your tunes,
yes,
essentially? Okay. What is the thing that determines your selection of the tunes?
If there's a personal connection, mm-hmm, like specifically for this album, I picked those particular tunes because they were songs that I had really great fond memories of listening to by artists such as Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan. And then some of them were tunes that I grew up on as a child. One of them is the Angela Goldfield tune, I'm On Your Side.
Yes.
In the game of love, sometimes we get left behind. When pushing comes to shove, happiness is hard to find. A fall from love can break your spirit, make a rosy out of blue. Darling, you don't have to fear. Baby, I am here for you. I'm on your side when times are hard and you need some understanding. I'm on your side when times get tough and no one else can care. You're the
She played a lot of Angela Bosel for me when I was a young child, so that was my way of hopefully paying homage to her, because I love her music. And I also love her spirit, too, because when you listen to her music, she's so creative.
Oh, yes.
You have vocalists that, you know, sing, but then you have vocalists that create.
Yes.
And she was one of those vocalists for me that I felt inspired me. So I wanted to do a song paying tribute to her. But then also I love Milton Nascimento as well.
Yes.
And he did a song called Tange with Wayne Shorter. It's one of my favorite tunes because he sings it in Portuguese. And I'm a huge hidden fan of singing in Portuguese. So I took the first try and I'm going to do it. And hopefully it's okay. But yeah, most of the tunes, they're tunes that I'm inspired by. September in the Rain, Sarah's On all day. I grew up listening to Sarah.
Back to the Portuguese, though. You covered another song that is usually recorded in, and I'm not even going to try to say the Portuguese title, but you recorded Waters of March.
Oh, yes. I did, with Dennis Day.
Yes, I'm going to play it. Yes.
Sure. Absolutely.
A stick, a stone, it's the end of the road. It's the rest of a stump, it's a little long. It's a sliver of glass, it is life, it's the sun. It is night, it is death, it's a trap, it's a gun. The oak when it blooms, the fox in the brush. A knot in the wood, the song of a thrush. The wood of the wind, a clip, a fall. A scratch, a lump, it is nothing at all. It's the wind blowing free, it's the end of a slope. It's a beam, it's a void, it's a hunch, it's a hope. And the riverbank talks of the waters of March. It's the end of the strain, it's the joy in your heart.
The foot, the ground, the flesh and the bone. The beat of the road, a slingshot stone. A fish, a flash, a silvery glow. A fight, a bet, the range of a bow.
A truckload of bricks in the soft morning light. The shot of a gun in the dead of the night. A mile, a must, a thrust, a bump. It's a girl, it's a rhyme, it's a cold, it's the mumps.
The plan of the house, the body in bed.
And the car that got stuck, it's the mud. A float, a drip.
A flight, a wing.
A hawk, a quail. Promise of spring and the riverbank talk of the waters of March. It's the promise of life, it's the joy in your heart.
Thank you.
grain, a bee, a bite, a blink, a buzzard, a sudden stroke of night.
A pen, a needle, a sting, a pain, a snail, a riddle, a wasp, a stain.
A pass in the mountains, a horse and a mule. In the distance, the shells rode three shadows of blue.
And the riverbank talked of the waters of March. It's the promise of life in your heart, in your heart. A stick, a stone, the end of the road. The rest of a stump, a lonesome road.
A sliver of glass, a light, the sun, a knife, a death. The end of the run.
And the riverbank talks of the waters of March. It's the end of all strain. It's the joy in your heart.
Joy in your heart.
Joy in your heart.
Joy in your heart. Joy in your heart.
So how did it feel recording that one?
It's fun. It brought back so many memories because I love Elis Regina. Mm. And I love Antonio Carlos Jobim. Those are my favorite Brazilian singers. And when he asked me to do it, I was like, yeah, this is like one of my favorite songs. So he used to put my own spin on it. And it was fun. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
We went in the studio and we did it so quick. It was fun.
Nice. See, this is all selfish at this point because I love Brazilian music. And your recording of this type of material, is it really nearing an actual happening?
Oh, you know what?
Songs in Portuguese.
I was actually talking with Romero Lugambo.
We
performed together at the CD release for Waiting for the Sunrise that I had last August. And it was with him, Eddie Henderson, Gerald Cannon, and Daryl Green.
Oh.
And we were talking. I was like, man, Romero, I love singing in Portuguese. Can you be my chair? And he was like, yeah, sure, I'll help you out. But we started kind of going over the song, and he was helping me fix some of the pronunciation and certain things. And then also we were going over comparing notes with the chord changes and whatnot, because for this particular music, you got to have the right chords. You can't just put some generic chords on there. And we were just talking, and he was like, yeah, you know, it'd be cool to do something. And I was like, man, it would be awesome if we could do something. Can we do something?
Great.
So I guess hopefully we'll figure it out between the two, because I know he's really, really busy too. But
right.
I would love to do something with him, yeah.
And speaking of Romero Lubombo, you recorded with Diane Reeves.
Yes, I did.
Listen to the wild rose in bloom. In her tune, strength and beauty grow with the days unfolding, each layer of her perfume. I want rabbits in my breath, till petals started falling from my pretty little face.
Oh.
Big time cultivators came to counsel me with bouquets and tips about how successful plots need some controls. My hips, I'd have more roses and more hands to help me reap and sow. I crossed that dotted
bones grew out of my thumbs and knees. Never knew they
with Diane Reeves, and so you work with Diane
Reeves.
How did you wind up working with her? What brought you together?
Man. Carrie Lynn Carey.
That's what I was going to say. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was certain that she was the reason.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was in my apartment one day, and I was just doing some business stuff, and I think I just finished teaching, and I got a text from Terry, and she's like, hey, are you available? And I said,
wow.
Yeah, what's going on? And she was like, okay, can you come down tonight? I need you to record something for me on flute and tenor. And I was like, okay. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't ask questions. I was just like, I'm there. And I showed up, and she said, yeah, we're working on this project for Diane Reeves. I was like, oh, my gosh. So she played all the tracks for me, and she gave me the music right there. And we just recorded it right there in the studio that night. It's the flute stuff and it's the tenor stuff. One of the songs is Wild Rose, which is written by Esperanza Spalding, and I played some flute on that. And
yes.
Then she had me play some tenor on another tune that featured Diane with Gregory Porter. And it was so cool because that was the first time I got to see Terry in the studio work as a producer. It was so incredible watching her because it was just like, wow, this is great seeing how all this music comes together. And just her dedication to the music is just beautiful to witness. And, of course, Diane Reeves, I mean, I grew up listening to her sing Better Days. It was a great full circle experience. But the best moment was finding out when it won that Grammy. It's like, oh, my God. Like, wow, I got to record Diane's album and it won a Grammy. That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, Terry Lynn Carrington, when you confirmed that she was the connection, every time I think of her now, especially with the transition of Jerry Allen, it's sort of like Terry Lynn Carrington sort of operates in the tradition of a Jerry Allen in that she really opens the way for musicians, young musicians. She makes things happen for young musicians.
Oh, yeah. She makes herself available. She's
yes.
out for us and gets us involved. she's one of those people that has been really instrumental and helpful for me, you know, as a young musician trying to figure out what I was going to do and how to do it. It was her, Tia Fuller, Mimi Jones. The three of them were really instrumental and like, no, little sis, come on, let's go. I'm going to throw you in the fire and see what happens and you'll learn and give you an opportunity to work it out. I mean, Terry, she's been such a godsend. I remember the first time I got to play with Jerry was because of Terry. Mm. They did a tribute to the International Sweethearts of Rhythm at the Howard Theater, and we got to play together and wow. got to see Jerry up close and personal. Like, wow, she's incredible.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, because of Terry, I got to play with my hero. We got to play with Chaka Khan and so many other great vocalists. But then once again, like this past summer, Terry, I got to work with her again. They were doing a tribute to Jerry Allen at the Detroit Jazz Festival, and they orchestrated some of Jerry's music. And thanks to Terry for the opportunity to be able to be part of it, playing my flute and playing my tenor and all this great music that Jerry had written 25, 30 years ago, and we got to bring it to life with an orchestra. So Terry's an incredible force in this music, and I'm very grateful and happy that she's here doing it.
And, you know, I mentioned in general young people that she, you know, opens the way for, but she also, you know, because there are people when they're putting their bands together and, you know, people say they're looking for the best musicians, but somehow some musicians don't think of other women to invite to be parts of these projects, and that could be a starting way to show that you want to change the way things have been.
Be that change.
Yeah, but she is definitely the change in that way as well. She
opens
up the door for lots of young women.
Definitely. She has. She has and still is.
Yeah, exactly.
She's beautiful.
You're being an educator.
Yes.
What does that entail?
A lot of things. Well, I don't even know where to start.
Well, how long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it for the last 10 years.
Okay. And you teach...
I teach clinics, I teach master classes, I've also taught at camp. I mentor young women musicians trying to figure it out. I like to look at it as something that's a job that I'm happy to be able to do in whatever setting that I'm in, because you just never know. For me, I was inspired by just seeing Tia Fuller, and I think of it as every time I have an opportunity to perform, I try to make it an opportunity to be available to young musicians. It's funny you say that, because the first tour I did with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra was this past Christmas season, and every time after we finished the show, there were some young girls that would run up by the backstage or on the stage as I was breaking out instruments, and it's funny because they would talk to me like, oh my gosh, I finally get to ask you some questions. Can I talk to you?
Oh.
I was like, yeah, sure. And we get to talk about anything, not just like, oh, what's it like being a, like, no, like real questions.
Right.
Like, how do I deal with playing, or how do I deal with whatever the situation is? And I just try to look at it as something that I strive to fulfill any and every opportunity I have a chance to have that horn in my hand and step on that stage, because you never know. Mm-hmm. And being a young woman, I understand what the struggle is, and pursuing something that is personal. And sometimes society does have a way of making young women feel like, well, why are you investing in yourself? You should, you know, care more about looking cute, or you should care more about running off and becoming what society expects of us, which is not a bad thing. But I always feel like to invest yourself into something that is yours and that is personal and that helps you grow as a person and also helps you develop confidence is not always encouraged. And for me, I understand that journey and I have to figure that out thanks to a mentor. So if there's a way I can make myself available, I try. And whether it's in a classroom setting or just on a stage or passing through or backstage or whatever. Yeah.
Hammett. Blewett. You want to talk about Blewett?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, man, Hammett Blewett, the first time I ever met him was at the Red Rooster. I can't remember if I was on my way somewhere or if I was coming. I'm probably coming home. And I ended up going into the Red Rooster, and there was a saxophone player named Rakim Walker. And he was like, hey, Camille. And I was like, hey, Rakim, because he's like a big brother to me. And he was like, I want to introduce you to somebody. And I was like, yeah, sure, this is Hammett Blewett. And I saw Blewett kind of looked at me. And I said, hi, Mr. Blewett, my name is Camille. He's like, I know who you are. I was like, oh, you know who I am? He's like, yeah, you that girl that played that saxophone. You can play. And I was just like, how did you know who I am? And we ended up sitting there for like probably like an hour or two just talking and laughing. And that became like the first day of a wonderful, beautiful friendship and relationship. He took me under his wing. He mentored me. I'll never forget, we would get together at his house, and as long as I would bring him a fish dinner or some type of meal made from scratch, he'd let me in the house.
Wow.
We'd sit down and we would do long tones, which almost felt like meditation. We would like sit opposite of each other and just blow out on our horn, holding our notes as quiet as we can, or screaming on our horns as loud as we could. And he really taught me how to understand the saxophone as not just an instrument that plays nice, perfect lines, but also as a spiritual instrument, as something that can tap into the core of who you are as a person and also reach out to people. There's a side of the saxophone, yeah, that sounds pretty, but then there's also a side of it that can scream, that can wail, but that can also moan. And I had never met anybody like him in my life, and he really blessed me with so many lessons, and he's a really special, special person. And I'm grateful and thankful that I was able to have the chance to get to know him and then become close with him at a really important time in my life.
Was that the last time you saw him, by the way, when I took the picture?
Yeah, last time I saw him was literally at the festival. It was funny because he just had some complications a couple of months before, and we were corresponding on phone. He'd be like, hey, Camille, I need to get me out of here. And I'm like, I can't do that, Blue. I'm going to get you in trouble. I need you to get me out of here, okay? Let's work this out. And I was like, no, I can't do that, Blue. But, you know, I will try to go and visit him. And then I'll never forget, he found out that I was going to play at the Charlie Parker Jazz Festival. He got somebody at the facility to escort him, get him out of that place, and come and see me. Actually, I was coming off stage, and I saw you. I had my horn in my hand. You know how it is. I'm coming off the stage. And I was like, okay, it's a whirlwind. First person I see is Blewett. My face was like, oh, my gosh, what did you do? Did you escape? And he was like, I knew, baby, I escaped for you. This is for the world.
Oh.
And we hugged, and you got that awesome shot, which I treasure because it was just like the perfect moment expressing to see the love that we have for each other.
Do you have anything happening around New York, the tri-state area?
The next thing I have in New York City is April 30th. Mm-hmm. I'll be playing at Daisy's Club Coca-Cola for International Jazz Day with myself and the Daryl Trio.
Oh, wow.
And I'll also be performing at Rose Theater with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra.
Again?
I believe in April and May. We have some dates coming up. So.
All right.
And you can go to my website, www.CamilleFemmeMusic.com, and see what's happening and where we'll be. And they can also leave their email. I have a mailing list. Usually every month I send out updates on what's happening. So that's the best way to stay in touch and find out the exact date.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And do you want to share your other coordinates of social media?
Sure.
Okay.
On Twitter, it's Camille Fehrman. On Instagram, it's Camille Fehrman. And on Facebook, it's Camille Fehrman Music. I have an artist page there where you can join and see what's happening and what's new and catch cool videos and whatnot.
Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, Camille Fehrman. We look forward to seeing you when you're around town.
Definitely. Thanks so much for having me, Joyce.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sug in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening has been saxophonist, vocalist, flute player, composer, clarinetist, band leader, and educator Camille Fehrman. When you get an opportunity to see Camille Fehrman, take it. Make sure you check her out. What you're listening to in the background is from Camille Thurman's 2018 Chesky Records release, Waiting for the Sunrise, Tarjay. Camille Fehrman on vocals, Jeremy Pelt is the featured trumpeter, Jack Wilkins guitar, Cecil McBee bass, and Steve Williams on drums. Before that, we heard from Diane Reeves in her 2013 Concord Records release, the Grammy-winning Beautiful Life, Wild Rose. Personnel includes Diane Reeves on vocals, Terry Lynn Carrington on drums, Camille Fehrman on flute, Esperanza Spalding is the bassist, composer, and she also provides backing vocals. Before that, we heard Waters of March from Dennis Llewellyn Day and Camille Thurman. This is from Dennis Day's 2018 D-Day Music Group release, Bossa, Blues, and Ballads. Dennis Llewellyn Day and Camille Thurman are on vocals. Before that, we heard another selection from Waiting for the Sunrise, Camille Thurman's 2018 Chesky Records release, I'm on Your Side, originally recorded by Angela Beaufield. Before that, another selection from Waiting for the Sunrise, The Nearness of You. Before that, we heard another selection from Origins, In Due Time. This one featured Cherizette Tinnen on drums. The liner notes, by the way, were provided by Raymond Nat Turner. Before that, we heard In This Quiet Place from Shami Royston's 2012 self-released Portraits. Shami Royston is the pianist and composer, Camille Thurman on vocals, Ivan Taylor on bass, Rudy Royston on drums. And before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. Don't forget, WBAI is in the midst of its winter fund drive, and we can use your support. Stay tuned for Anne Marie Hendrickson and her mansion with friends. And Sugar in My Bowl will be back next Tuesday at 10 p.m., hopefully with something you'll enjoy. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.